Right. Did we have to do anything else? We've noted everything. I think that's enough, isn't it, for those items? Right, now we come on to the real star turn this morning. We have the internal audit performance report. And we've got this morning, I'd like to welcome Paul Somerset, who's deputising for Lizzie Goodwin, who normally comes along and does this. But again, Lizzie is away. If they will organise meetings during half term, is what happens. Everybody clears off. But there are a few of us left. So thank you for coming along, Paul. And would you like to lead us through this performance report?
Thank you, Chair. And this is the standard audit progress report that you will receive at every meeting. You'll notice in this audit there have been four completed audits since the last meeting. One medium risk, which is the famous and multiple occupation, and then three further reports which are all classified as high risk, and they are included in their entirety. My colleague Lorraine is here to answer any questions on any of the audits that are presented to you today, but that's all I plan to say really is it's more open to questions and details if you need it. Lorraine, I understand some of the service editors are also here to answer any questions you may have about any of the completed audits.
Yes, I'm sorry, I should have said that at the beginning. So can I welcome Chris Jones, who is available to answer any queries on the special needs side of things, and Martin Goff from School Transport. So if you have any questions on those particular items, we haven't got a bit of IT, have we?
No, but I think Helen will be doing social media and...
Are you up for answering questions on IT? Well, we'll see. Right. Okay. Well, we'll see when we get there.
Yeah.
See when we get there.
Sorry.
Right.
We do have a response on CCTV from the CCTV manager.
CCTV manager.
Yeah. We have a written response on that one. If there's any questions on that, but that's what we can provide on that one.
So I think what you've said is that we've had the report to read. You're here to answer any questions. We have some officers to answer any questions. So then we ask for any questions. I know some of you have diligently gone through the thing. Oh, a forest of hands gone up. Right. Brian, we'll start with you, then we come on to Chris and then Paul.
Okay. It's page 7, executive sound phones with multiple occupancy. There's a number of risks there, medium risk, low risk, and so on, and I'm not going to go into each of them. But the one fundamental thing that's coming through all of those, there seems to be a lack of control over the whole system. I just wondered if we had any comments on that.
Thank you, Councillor. Yes, we have looked at hose and box occupancy for a number of years. I think what we'd like to see when we come to internal audit is a series of nice, cleanly documented processes which are consistently exercised and evidenced, and there's a level of management review, simplistically. I don't think there's anything massively wrong with the way the team are working, but that's not what we found. I think they're sort of very much sort of getting on with the day job. So, for example, if you have an action plan, which then the visit, the follow-up of the action plan is some handwritten notes on the action plan. It's not clear how actions have been addressed, that kind of thing. Now, what I can say is that where the homes in multiple occupancy sits organisation has changed. That's now coming under revenue services. And we're also implementing a new software system. So rather than the register being in a spreadsheet, it's all going into the new Accolade system, which is also being used across revenue services and planning. And there's a number of actions which were agreed as an outcome of this audit, which we will be following.
So when will this be up and running? When will all these various errors and things that are included in here be late? Well, not happen again. We'll have a clean system, thank you. So ideally, what?
I've got the full report in front of me. The actions, just quickly simming down the reports, the actions are all scheduled to be done by summer. To that's summer 2019. You'll see in the audit plan for next year, there's a specific item for follow-up. I will be following up on all of these actions and bringing the report back to the team, probably, I would imagine, September time.
Okay, Chris?
Two points again. The first picks up on what you've just been saying about the reporting system. Not long ago on the island, we had a conference on artificial intelligence. This seemed a key opportunity for using it to identify where we don't have data and to be triggering the mechanisms for finding the data. And maybe that's something that we should write into the schedules of what we want from the program that we'll do things like that. The second one is the new definitions of home multiple occupation. It did have to be 3 stories, and now it's from the 1st of October, it's 2 stories. From the number that we've identified and the number that we seem to say qualify for being registered, feels like a mismatch. The new regulations from the 1st of October last year is for any building that has 5 residents in 2 or more, or 5 or more residents in 2 or more units of accommodation, family units, whatever. Of the houses of multiple occupation on my patch, there were certainly ones that in October were not registered, and because they didn't need to be in the old system, and I wonder whether we've got some serious unreported there. Is anyone looking at that?
This is an area which we discussed during the audit, and I've just skimmed out the report. The team do carry out a number of activities to identify potentially unlicensed houses and multiple occupancy. A couple of examples I've got down here in the report is they've actually contacted letting agents, they've placed adverts in the paper, so people say this is a requirement, please notify us if you're aware of potential HMOs which we're not aware of. They've reviewed council tax records, and just skimming down, what we have suggested specifically regarding that is that they need to engage with other councils to get benchmarking, so we can actually look at how we compare to other councils. Does the level of HMOs we're identifying on feel right, or that discrepancy? And we've also said that they should obviously continue the activities that we do to identify potentially unlicensed HMOs. And also, one of the things which I think is factored in the executive summary is that they're looking at implementing a scheme to license all HMOs, as the council has pointed out. It does seem quite arbitrary, the level at which HMOs are required to be licensed.
Okay.
The level might be arbitrary, but it is said.
Right, I think we move on to Paul's question now.
Thank you. I'm going on to E29 and the potential risks column, where it says, particularly at a high level, the council will not be complying with the Children's and Families Act. And, that to me is a little bit of a concern, particularly since we've had a very positive Ofsted rating. I'm just wondering where that ties in with that positive, good Ofsted reporting, because it's mentions here, particularly within special educational needs, that there is not necessarily an openness with sharing information with carers about the opportunities there are for young people. And I'm just wondering how best we can counter that, and why isn't this not picked up within the Ofsted section, which you imagine would be, because it is an important aspect of the work that the Children's Services actually comply with.
Can I ask Chris Jones if she would like to comment on that as well, please?
Yes, I can answer that. In response to your question, it's two separate frameworks. The inspection that happened around social care was particularly focused on the social care framework. This is in relation to the Ofsted inspection that we haven't yet had. We're expecting it was a 5-year period, and we're now in the third year, and we haven't yet been inspected as a council. So it's an entirely different framework, so that's why it was picked up under that framework. In response to your specific question, the audit had picked up a particular bit around the reporting back to parents as to why their request for an education and health and care needs plan had been turned down. So this was about us giving clear rationale for us to, not issuing an education and health and care plan at a particular point in the process, which actually hasn't now been addressed. I think it was clear in the audit that we'd had a complete changeover in staff, and it was a moment in time when we were on the training. We were in the process of training all our staff, and that has now been picked up, and we are compliant with that particular part.
Thank you. Do you want to add anything to that? Are you happy?
No, just to say that I completely agree with that. I think if we came back into the audit in 12 months' time, thank you for the picture.
Thank you. Yes, fine.
This is E17, which is special education. And in many ways, it's just repeating what I said earlier on the earlier one. We've got a number of things down here as high risk, low risk, and advisory. But again, when you read into them, the control over those various areas seems to be failing. And we can rather pick them out and go from individually. There just seems to be a lack of control generally across the whole lot. I'd just like some comments on that.
What I would say about this review, I think this area was much better controlled than perhaps some other areas of the council. I think historically there were issues with the timeliness and consistency of processing. But certainly I think, as it says in the executive summary, you had a near complete turnover of staff in the team. You have a new team leader in there who's come from a mainland authority. And I think if you were to look at how things are being carried out now, you would have a very different picture. But I don't accept what the council says.
If there are any out from entry, it's fine, it's identifying it, but what we will know is when it's going to be cured.
I will be following this up and I will report it back.
Another one for you.
Yes, Chris.
On E19, there's the issue around the access to the page of the website, and one of the things that it says is that the search facility and the ease of getting into the website is not good enough, but maybe not economic to require. But that doesn't stop us learning the lesson that it's about specifying what we need in the first place properly. And if being easy to search and easy to navigate were in amongst the final criteria that we set for the system, then it shouldn't be good with it. And I think we should be learning the lesson, even if not for this one, for future systems that we'd like to have.
I think it's
Chris, do you want to comment on that?
No.
Okay. Yes, Brian.
Home to school transport. Where I was in the last two, the executive summary identified some numbers of high risk and everything else.
Sorry, what page are you on? Sorry, what page are you on, Brian?
Second.
What page are you on?
I'll pick my mind. It's E35.
Thank you.
Chris, can you turn your mic off, please?
What it is it's going back to the other two comments I made before. Lots of risk there. But overall, if you read the paper and you go through, there's failings on various things. the systems that don't seem to work again.
Right. So, Martin, we'll bring you in at some stage, but do you want to say something to the internal audit? Want to say something first?
I'm happy to hand this straight over to Martin.
Right, we're on home to school transport now.
You don't want to hear all this of issues around staffing, but in a particular year in which this audit took place, we do have just two members of staff that provide the homeschool transport service, which is it's a relatively high spend business that has a revenue budget within the Isle of Wight Council business, and just those two members of staff were providing the service. One member of staff was taken to hospital in quite short circumstances, and that's an ongoing illness that he was still being treated for just last week, and the other member of staff lost a very close family in really tragic circumstances. So we did have particular issues. If you're referring to, for instance, the first IMIS, and you'll see that if you in the event of sorting out further detail, we were able to immediately go out and put that high risk right. Other areas, I think we are being slightly hamstrung by our contract written back in 2011, where we intended a lot of processes to follow through looking at operator compliance and whether or not they were delivering the service that we wanted. And it's actually really quite difficult to do. So, for example, if the bus runs late, in principle, we can not pay certain letters as much as we said we would, but actually proving that it was a certain letters failing is really quite difficult to do. And actually, the service is really quite good from the bus provider. So we haven't been, for instance, following through on our contract compliance in that case. And I think we'll find it very difficult to do. But if you're looking at how are we going to be right for September 2020, we do need to put in place a whole new contract because the existing contract has come to an end. There is a reality to providing the service on the Isle of Wight, which is we don't have a very vibrant and competitive market with a number of providers of these large vehicles that are likely to win the tender that we must go out and do in a, you know, in a proper sense. But the reality might be that we'll be contracting with exactly the same operator, and we do need to, where we can, put in place very realistic features to the contract that says provide what the island's children, families and schools need, and where there is an appropriate clause that looks to the quality of the service, I think we need to get it right so it is enforceable. I think there's standard features of contracts which are, if I use the Hampshire example, a little bit easier to do, because if the contractor isn't very good, we've got dozens of those contractors that can do it better work.
Yes, go on.
Your uses and a new contract, all the batteries now are all on new units. Remember, they have, they can record them, so they get tracked and then get some money back.
Yeah, and if it doesn't connect to the roadworks that are in place, then certainly, yeah, if it's absolutely an operator error around, possibly in the depot lanes or a driver not turning up and struggling to provide that cover, absolutely.
Yes, Martin did refer to the difficulty of trying to get competitive tenders when there is a monopoly of buses on the island. You may remember, as part of the Brexit strategy, the government took out a contract with a ferry company that didn't have any ferries, so perhaps we could contact that same company and say, despite the fact you haven't got any buses, could you give us a tender? Plan B. Are there any more questions on that, please? In which case, what are we doing? Are we noting this or approving it?
Sorry, are we still on? Sorry.
Yes, we're still on paper E if you've got something else. Yes.
I'll just put the record on here. Everyone's had me in 63, but certainly to the code of practice. I go through this again. There's a number of people by this, but there seems to be a failure to operate in an agreeable manner. Same as us complained about before.
Well, funnily enough, Jen has just passed across the recommendations which we're looking at the end of this particular item of the agenda. And one item is to consider the issues identified and to seek reassurance that actions are being undertaken to address the findings. You could have written that, couldn't you, Brian?
No, it's gone.
But I think we take the point. Do you want specific detail? Do you want to say something specific about it or just in general?
I've got all the other three items, I've got assurance that something's happened.
Right.
I've raised this one, I've got an assurance, I know it's been in our recommendations. I haven't got an assurance of anybody that something's going to happen.
I believe they indicated they had a written statement.
Who would like to respond to that? Yes, Paul.
As a part of the audit process, when any issues are found, we do sit down with the customer and clients who agree actions going forward, so all audits will have actions and anything of a progress will be followed up in the briefing in the next year, and we will report back to you on the status of those follow-ups and also the stage in which they're at. So we will look to report to you in the stage to say whether they're completed, whether they've completed a mitigating risk, whether they're in progress, whether they're open. So we'll be able to see from next year what the level of compliance is with the follow-ups.
And we have Helen, would you like to come in on that?
Yes, and if I could just add, I know we're probably looking at the COVID surveillance policy and social media survey. Our medium is not high risks, but they too have a series of actions, specifically in my area. Part of that is around updating the COVID surveillance policy. There's some fairly minor things, for example, I was in the residence, because I actually was, you know, it's just adjust the type of the person who's in my office, who will be just in the form. I would say within that the covert surveillance, there is a commission of the Secretary of the Home Office, and they carry out inspection every 3 years. We were last inspected in 2015 as a result of that. We amended our policies to inform them of their recommendations. They will be coming back later this year with recommendations, which hopefully don't differ to the audit, but we will be taking use has to become more level. So every 3 years we inspect it. In terms of COVID surveillance, I don't think we've actually used to use COVID surveillance for the last 6 years, despite that permission to carry out the reviews to make sure we have appropriate processes in place. It's something that across the country is recognised that councils are using less and less covert surveillance partners and what resources, apart from our own work. Social media, which is a little different, and there's obviously the use of social media is a bit of a, it's not as black and white as you'd like, because it's a lot of information on the net that is openly available to everybody. It's when you start moving from that and start following something, so there are a different way which you can do. And the importance to do it properly, of course, is that any information we gather through these methods can be used in court, and if we don't do it correctly, it won't be admissible. So it's important for us to get it right as well. But there is an action plan set out in here, and I have spoken to Justin and I between us all, which the actions that are assigned to us are going. I think both of them have by September of this year.
Thank you, Helen. Chris.
On page E48, we've got the new bus contract coming in from September, which is fine if it's actually starts operating. It needs to be sorted out by July because we need to tell the parents of the children who will be going on the buses what arrangements can be made for them. And you've got the school for a holiday all through August, so that actually needs to be a decision that is taken. So, as long as the decision is taken in a timely fashion, it's implemented in September, but it can't be decided in September.
It's September 2020 that we'll need a new contract in place for. The tender activity will begin imminently. and we would hope to have something ready for the summer this year, looking ahead to the following year, so that we start to have that detailed conversation about exactly what provision is being purchased in the contract.
So what you're saying is, although it says target date September 2019, it's actually on the left. It says 2020, that's what you're saying, is it? Is that what you're querying, Chris?
There's one other area where it says the green fence funding for some of the reporting activity is removed. The removal of green fence funding doesn't stop company moves that need to engage in for us to do the reporting that is required. So just make that point.
That's in relation to the sustainable modes of travel strategy. Departments for Education have left that in statutory guidance. I did meet with them twice towards the end of 2018 because they're proposing that it stays in statutory guidance. But if you read just even the summary detail that's provided in your audit report, it's a huge tax just on the Isle of Wight alone. And it's required annually. And if I'm frank, it's ridiculous. It can't be carried out on the islands, nor can it be carried out in Hampshire, nor is it being carried out in many local authorities. In its original guidance prior to 2010, it was really generously funded, and there was a massive collaboration between local authority and schools, because it isn't just a go out and audit your roads and think about what public transport you've got going on. It has this direct link between understanding all the modes of travel that church school children are using and then building that into individual strategies school by school and then in the wider area. So there's a particular requirement to look at that again and try and put something in place, but it is an impossible task and certainly not possible to review annually in the way that it is currently in legislation. And Hampshire has sort of failed in the same regard for a number of years too.
So have we as a council used an actual desire to disregard these regulations?
No, we'll do something to meet the requirements. And if we are going to meet its letter and its spirit, then we'll have, you know, the resources that will be required would have to be found and quite frankly isn't available at the moment. So we will meet in spirit. I don't believe we'll be able to do this annual update that is currently written into legislation, and we are lobbying the Department for Education to look at whether or not they maintain it in the statutory requirements.
Surely the right body to be doing that lobbying is the local government association, and they might be facing it at the level of the proposal.
I think the Director of Children's Services conversation with the Department for Education are making exactly the same point. So I think it is going on. It's not just a personal crusade, it is going on at those different levels. And certainly, I think it would be useful to be raised with the RGA.
Okay.
Just out of entry, I think at some stage we should review this specifically, because I don't think it's acceptable for us to be disregarding sets of regulations.
What period of time would you suggest? Should we ask them to come back in 6 months or a year, or what do you think?
I think we should take an action to ask them to come back, but I mean, what is a realistic timescale? A year?
Okay, can we enter that in a minute, please? Yes, so we will ask for a report this time next year, please. Any more questions on this area, on this paper, please? So, can I draw your attention then to the recommendations on page E2, which is to receive the progress report of the Council's internal audit provider and consider where any further information or action is necessary, and also to consider the issues identified in the high-risk reports and to seek reassurance that action is being undertaken to address the findings What's that say?
To ask that homeschool transport update provided in years time.
And to ask that homeschool transport update is provided in a year's time. We add that on officially.
On the sustainable mode of transport.
Yep. On the
SMOs.
Right, is everybody clear what we're voting on, please? Right, it's moved. Can we have a seconder, please? John, thank you. Are you all happy we vote on that, please? All in favour? Everyone's in favour? Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you, James.